Please be advised this podcast contains descriptions of graphic violence and it's not appropriate for children. Narelle Fraser is back with us to talk about some of the most daunting days in her diverse and challenging career.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
We start with another of those heavy responsibilities that I didn't even realise falls to police. This is one of those stories that's like we don't realise that falls under the category of police work, I think, oftentimes. Mm. We don't understand that you were called out to sudden infant death syndrome deaths. The terrible situation in which a family wakes up and finds a baby non-responsive.
Yep.
The baby has died in the night time. The police have to come.
Yep.
What happens?
They're now called SUDIs.
Oh, okay.
They're now called a sudden unexplained death of an infant.
Okay.
I don't know what the, you know, change of name is, but they're now called SUDIs.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I would say apart from a death message, this would probably be the worst, the hardest job in the police force.
What's a death message? That when you have to go and tell someone?
Yeah, when right. You have to go and tell somebody who's, you know, out gardening and, you know, look, you're going to have to come inside, something's happened and, you know, you have to tell them that their loved one has been killed in a car accident or something. It's shocking. Anyway, this job, it's sudden infant deaths or unexplained death. The police are required to go to these because they're unexplained. It's an unexplained death.
Yeah.
So it could be a little bit, I suppose, like a missing person. It could be an offence, it could be a murder, but it also could be something like just a natural little babies die sometimes. So because it's unexplained, that's why we have to go.
Mm.
But this sudden infant death was a very, very difficult one, as if they're not difficult enough on their own. But with these jobs, it's hard because as if the parents aren't going through enough. But then we have to start asking these probing questions about, you know, what happened when you woke up? Why did you do that? And it's like, it's almost quite accusatory. Like they are just in the depths of despair. You just cannot imagine, can you? You never want to imagine. But this little baby had died in the parents' bed, which is, it happens a lot. And the mother was sleeping. The father had gone to work and the mother was sleeping and they put the little baby in with the mum in the double bed. And when mum woke up, she realised that the baby wasn't breathing. She called the AMBOs, 000, and when the AMBOs got there, the little baby was deceased. And so because it's a SUDI, we get called and unfortunately, I happened to be working this particular day and so I was required, myself and another guy from my office, we went to this SUDI. Now, to paint a picture, I would have to say I've seen some of the worst living conditions that anyone could imagine. You know, people living on dirt floors. I've just seen the worst imaginable. But the house, when I walked into this house this particular day, this particular morning, I'd have to say it is by far the worst, most shocking house I have ever seen. I could tell from the outside of the house it was unkempt. The grass was very high. There was kids, stuff scattered everywhere, but it was just so messy. And like there's mess, but then there's mess. And this was, you know, anyway, so as we walked in the front door, the AMBOs came to meet us and they said, basically, this is pretty bad. Take a deep breath or something along those lines. Mm. The little baby was in the bed, so we had to go and have a look at the little baby. So what happens is we go through the kitchen. The door opened into the kitchen, the back door, which is where we went through, front door, sorry. It opens into the kitchen. Anyway, I'm not joking, I slipped. The minute I walked in, I slipped just a little bit, you know, and it was like, oh, you sort of get yourself. Anyway, I looked around and I could not see the kitchen bench. There were pots and pans. I don't think they would have washed a pot, a dish, anything, I'd have to say for like months. And they had food scraps in the pots and it stank. Mm. You could not see, you didn't know where the bench really started, where it finished. It was filthy. And it was the summer, and I can remember all the blinds were down, so you couldn't see anything, but it was so hot in there. And they had the heater on in the lounge room, and it was almost unbearable, not only for the heat, but also for just the filth. And in the lounge room, as I walked into the lounge room, the where I'd slipped, there was food scraps on the floor, there was dog poo, there was cat litter, it was just, it's hard to imagine. And when I walked into the lounge room, you have to then walk through the lounge room to get to the bedrooms, to the hallway to where the bedrooms were. And in the lounge room, there were, hazard a guess, maybe, I don't know, half a dozen to eight packets of cigarettes. And there's cigarette butts everywhere. And half of it, it's not in a cigarette ashtray. You know, there's cigarettes that have been butted out on top of speakers, and there's McDonald's all over the floor. And like, they'd eaten half a hamburger, for instance, and the other half is just on the floor. Anyway, their little two-year-old is on the floor playing. Oh. And there's Jim Beam cans. It is indescribable. And then when we go into the main bedroom, again, the blinds are down and it is so hot, it's unbearable. And the little baby was in the bed, and I didn't particularly want to go and see the baby. The guy that I was with was a sergeant, and I think he said, I'll be right in a row law, but he went and looked at the baby and he just said to the Ambos, look, you know, that's fine, just take it. But of course, we have a grieving mother, but I'm so revolted by the house, so I've got to show, you know, empathy, compassion, all that, which I did feel for her, but it was also like, I'm sorry, but I couldn't help but think, no wonder that poor little baby has died, because there was no air. And next to the bed, on the bedside table, there was cans of Coke, cans of Jim Beam, cigarette butts, chicken bones. I'll never forget, there was actual chicken bones on the floor right next to the bed. And she had, not she, they, had the heater on in the room. There was no air. I actually wanted to say to her, what were you thinking? But nobody would ever want, you know, of course. But
yeah,
sort of felt a little bit like, not shaking her, but saying, come on, how can a little baby breathe in this house, you know?
Mm.
And I remember the morning sun was coming through the curtains, and it was just unbearably hot, stifling. Anyway, so I think we were all a bit shocked.
I bet.
There was a whole lot of feelings. You know, I felt for the mum, but I'm thinking to myself, I was almost a little bit angry, thinking, what are you doing to this poor little baby? And of course, then there's the two-year-old running around, really no idea what's going on. And so I comforted the mum, and, you know, I said to her, like, I couldn't stand almost being in there, and I said, come on, we'll go outside. And anyway, they take the little baby, the Ambos take the little baby and put it in the ambulance. And I can remember them taking that off to the hospital, and I stayed with the mum because we had to ring the dad and had to get the dad home from work. And I remember we must have spoken to the dad's supervisor or something, and the supervisor brought the father home, and look, they were just devastated, of course. But then we have this, like, we have a responsibility for that little two-year-old.
Yeah.
That little two-year-old, it was literally, he was living in a pigsty.
Mm.
So we had no choice, but we had to ring DHS, because our responsibility is also for that little boy. Like, my concern was that he could very easily, well, I don't know about pass away, but it's not the environment. I mean, who am I to say what an environment is for a little boy? But when you do as many jobs as I do with kids that are neglected, abused, whatever,
yeah,
this child wasn't safe. It was safe with its parents, but not the conditions.
I think that it's safe to say that if anything ever happened to that child and the public found out that you had been there that house and done nothing, there would be an outrage.
And I know the sergeant and I, we were in sort of in shock.
I bet.
And then we both sort of agreed, you know what, we have a responsibility for that little boy, the surviving little boy. So we ended up, we had to ring DHS.
Coming up after the break, Narelle tells us about another difficult day on the job. Coming up, Narelle Fraser talks us through another one of the most difficult days on the job. Do you remember when the supervisor brought the dad home?
Like, yes.
Do you remember, did that man, was he aware that they lived like that? Was there, were neighbours? Do you remember any peripheral people sort of being aware of what was going on in there?
No, I don't. Mm. No. And I don't think DHS had any previous reports.
Wow.
But the parents obviously loved their kids, but they just had, and they were very young.
Yep.
And I just don't think they had any idea
about
how to manage a house.
Yeah.
And I know he worked a lot of shift work, so she was home a lot with the kids and she was very young and, you know, it's easy. I'm making excuses for her in one way, but in another way I think, well, sometimes it's not her fault in a way. I mean, yes, she's an adult, she's had two children, but what sort of a life has she had that she thinks this is okay, this is normal? Like, so what if, you know, like seriously, the pots and pans were at least, I don't know, 1.5 feet off the bench.
Yeah.
Like nothing had been cleaned. It was revolting. Oh, the carpet, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, so with, you know, and I've just read yesterday in the paper about a DHS lady that's, you know, talking about
caseloads.
Oh.
Yes, yes,
and, you know,
I read that too, yeah.
I would not be a DHS worker if you paid me. I think... Yes, I can be very critical of DHS for a lot of things that they have done in my career and not done.
Yeah.
But also I think they are under enormous pressure because we're the ones that see that.
Yeah.
But they are the ones that actually have to take the child away from the parents, that have to, you know, go to court, like the talk to the parents, interview the parents. Oh, their caseloads.
Well, then also then and put that child into a foster system that's less than ideal as well, you know. So it's a really difficult situation to be in, to take them from a home life that's not ideal, but then where are we putting them? Do you then ever get updated about a scenario like that, or is that?
No, unless we are required, like at court.
Oh, okay.
Say, for instance, they need evidence that of the condition of the house, like they would have seen the condition of the house too when they went around there. But sometimes we are required to support the evidence of what they're saying and why the child needs to be taken away. But, like, what a heart-wrenching job for DHS to actually take somebody's child off them. Like those young parents with the baby that died, I think they would have been absolutely horrified. Like, imagine losing one child.
Yeah.
But then... they would have, I don't know what happened, but I'm sure they would have had to have taken the little boy away, but not forever. Like DHS, their role is to try and keep families together, not to tear them apart. So, and that's a perfect example of where DHS could come in and they could help them with, you know, some basic how to look after a house, how to keep a house clean. Like, you can't imagine somebody would have to be taught that by somebody other than their parents. But
it's amazing you bring that up because in a previous episode, very recently, we were talking to Sandra Pankhurst, whose job it is to go cleaning.
Oh, yes.
So she does murder scenes, but she also does a lot of hoarding, a lot of houses like this.
Yes.
Or not that's hoarding, but she talks about the same thing. She talks about some people who don't know how to keep house, who have never, who have grown up in a similar situation themselves, have never been taught how to do it.
Yeah.
And she says, rather than, you know, the government sending me back every couple of years to just clean these houses up, how about we go and visit once a month and just keep this sort of training process and just keep helping people to learn these skills, you know, because it's something we don't want to talk about in our culture, but there are some children growing up in these situations who never learn how to take care of a house and live in a family.
And see, it's learned behaviour, isn't it? Because
we just shame them. We just shame generation after generation for not knowing how.
Yeah. And at least with DHS coming into that family, I have no doubt that DHS would have said to them, bottom line is, you are going to lose your second child.
Yeah.
We need to do something here. So that may have been the catalyst for them, you know, hopefully changing their life. I mean, I can't ever imagine them living in a spotless house, but I can imagine them thinking, well, maybe we'd better put, you know, the food away because of the flies, because of the germs, you know. God, I've just got a vision there of their bathroom. Oh, my God. Goodness me, I can just see there were nappies all over the bathroom floor and in the bath. Like, they just didn't put anything away or put it in bags or I think I've given you a reasonable idea of what the house was like.
And again, it's just an interesting insight into a police person's day. You know, a phone call that you can get, as if a sudden unexplained death of an infant isn't bad enough to then get there and realise that you have to intervene in this family in this way, you know, and that you have to deliver even worse news to this couple because it sort of plays on your conscience and you can't just leave. You can't walk out the door and leave this other baby here.
No. And they're the sort of things that you often go home of a night. And especially jobs, any job with a child where DHS is involved. Yeah. And this is how we feel. I can't imagine with DHS. And you think to yourself, did I make the right decision about, say, not calling DHS with a lot of jobs?
Yeah.
Did I make the right decision? Because, God, what if that baby or that little person dies overnight and I'm responsible, or they get belted overnight? Like that happened a lot where you'd think, God, should I have rung DHS or should I have taken that child out? But I remember one night I'd worked until, it's not a child, well, it sort of is a child job, but I'd worked the whole weekend I was on call, and you're on call on your own. Mm. So you go out, and this particular weekend I'd had a shocking weekend. It had been an alleged rape of a little 8-year-old boy, and then I had a rape of 3 boys somewhere else, and I ended up having to call someone in because I just couldn't do it all.
Yeah.
Anyway, 5 to 4, my shift for the weekend finishes at 4 o'clock of a Sunday, and then we get somebody else to come in and take over. And it's always the same. You are on call until 4 o'clock. If a job comes in at 1 minute to 4,
it's yours.
It's mine. If it comes in at 1 minute past 4, it's the person coming on call. It's an unwritten law, but that's just how it's always been. And at 5 to 4 this Sunday afternoon, just talking about how tired you can get and like all these decisions, and you think, I don't think I can do this. I'm so tired. But then you think, oh, my God, what if I make the wrong decision and I don't do anything, the little child gets hurt or whatever.
Mm.
So 5 to 4 this Sunday, the phone goes, and it's downstairs at the watch house, and they've got a woman with her 17-year-old daughter, and she wants to speak to somebody about a sexual assault. Well, you know, hello, that's me. So down I go and I take them into a room. Anyway, what had happened, long story short, what had happened was that the sister, the young girl, there's a brother and a sister. The mum has a son and a daughter. And what's happened is the son, who's 18, has been watching porn all night, and he's got himself into a bit of a state, and he's gone into the room and raped his sister, his full-blood sister.
Oh, my God.
She's tried to fight him off.
Mm.
She's got into the passageway, and he's actually raped her in the passageway, his actual sister. And the mother comes in, and, of course, this is what's happened, and it's only happened the night before. Well, I can't do anything other than I have to, like, the girl really connects with me, and I can't actually well, I'm not supposed to pass it on, but I probably could have, I don't know, but the girl, you know, told me, and anyway, just like the mother, what a position for the mother to be in.
Yeah.
You know, she wants to support her daughter, but her son has actually raped. Anyway, he ended up going inside.
Yeah, you would have to.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And you would have to remove him immediately from the home, right?
Absolutely. So my point is, at 5 to 4, I've had, you know, rapes all weekend.
Oh, my God.
And then I've got to go and do a warrant because we've got to get, you know, his clothing. We've got to do a luminol the house. And, oh, my. Anyway, I think I got home that night at, say, oh, God, it would have been 2 a.m. or something. And I think that's the night I went through a speed camera.
Right.
I was so tired.
And so desperate to get home. Yeah. I would have been so desperate
I
to get.
I lost my license.
Did you? Oh, my God. I would have been
desperate
camera, to get home.
And I had no idea. I was just so exhausted and so tired. And I had to get up the next morning to go to court. So I might have had.
Not for your own speeding fine, no doubt, but for somebody else's offences. My God.
Oh, anyway.
Thank you for downloading Australian True Crime, and thank you to our team, which is one person, Bartholomew Heeran. If you enjoy the podcast, please take the time to leave us a nice review and 5 stars and to follow us on Facebook.